I want to introduce you now to Daniel Martindale. Daniel Martindale, like me, has always considered himself to be an American. An American who suddenly found himself in Ukraine. An American who found himself in Ukraine trying to help the Russian military, which he did. And as a result of helping the Russian military, he's now going to be living in Moscow. This is a fascinating, fascinating story that I want to share with you through Daniel Martindale's own words and experiences. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So how did you find yourself in Ukraine, of all places, as this war was starting there?
I really wanted to end up in Donetsk. I wanted to be back in Russia because I understood that probably some kind of a war is about to start, and very likely it could be between Russia and NATO. And I understood that if there's going to be some kind of conflict, I want to be with people who believe the same things I do, who understand that Washington is the world's greatest evil at this point. And so I left telling everyone that I was going to be a missionary in Ukraine, while really I wanted to get home to Russia.
Why do you say get home to Russia if you were getting there from the United States?
Well, you see, I have been on my journey to start a new life in Russia since 2015. And so, despite my many mishaps and unfortunate things that happened in my journey, I was still trying to get back to Russia just before the war started.
So your thinking was geopolitical, really. I mean, you're an American, regular-looking American guy, American-speaking guy, who believe that there are forces within your government, my government, our government, I guess, as people who come from the United States, that were just awful, that were doing really bad things, deceitful things. And
it didn't start yesterday.
Killing people, yeah, from Vietnam, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, I mean, all the way through to finally now Ukraine and, to a certain extent, Gaza, right?
Yeah.
So these are things you've believed for a long time. Where did you get those thoughts?
They started with revelations about what happened on September 11th in 2001. The best resource for that, if you want to understand what I'm talking about, is AE911.org, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That opened my eyes to the fact that my government was not working for the better good of their people, but really for the better good of whoever has the financial interests that stand behind Washington.
So do you believe that, in fact, 9/11 was an inside job perpetrated for a certain effect?
97% sure.
So you have that feeling, which, by the way, a lot of people I'm hearing have these days, more so than in the past when it was in vogue.
If I could comment.
Please.
In 2010, I believe there was a survey where they asked people in the United States if they believe the official version of 9/11 or not. A more radical couching of the question than that is you can't really expect from the United States. But over 60% of the respondents said that they did not believe it. So it's an opinion that I would say today is probably definitely represents the majority.
I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, but I should ask you, since you have a conviction about this, why did they do that, if they did that?
It's obvious that they've reaped a lot of benefits from it in terms of their control of petroleums from the Middle East. They took away...
So what you're saying is look at that, all that was gained from it. The war in Iraq, which made billions of dollars for people, $7 trillion in all between Iraq and Afghanistan. And all that money did not go to the citizens of America. It went into people's pockets. Is that right?
I don't know, but it would be very logical.
Yeah. All right, let's go to let's get you to Iraq. Pardon me. Ukraine.
Ukraine.
So many wars. so you end up in Ukraine just as the Russians are going into Ukraine.
Just before.
You were there just before. Mm-hmm. But several weeks later, all of a sudden you find yourself in what is a military action, correct?
That's correct. Although I expected that that was going to happen.
So, but you're on, I imagine that you're, because you're in Ukraine, you haven't told people there that you're for Russia.
No, I have not.
They're assuming you're for them, right?
Yeah, most likely. I tried to make all of my explanations about where my loyalty lies somewhat neutral, at least so that it could be interpreted either one way or the other. I don't like to lie, so I tried to make it so that it was just a sin of omission rather than...
But the fact is, you were pulling for Russia while you were in Ukraine.
Absolutely.
What was that like?
Probably like being a European in World War II who was hiding some Jews.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you decide you were not just going to think it, but you were going to act on it and help Russia?
You see, it wasn't really a decision that I made before I got to the front line or the war zone. Mm-hmm. It was a decision that came about from seeing in the news what the Ukrainians were doing to Russian cities, what they call separatist cities in in the Donbass, and realizing that the people who are responsible for those civilian deaths and damage to the civilian infrastructure were all around me, and that the weapons that I saw being used around me that were pointed in that direction were responsible for that. And I understood that this is not a war between two governments who want territory. This is a war between a police force, really, and some kind of a gang that's just interested in their own hatred of everything Russian.
Where were you at the time?
I was in Korakhova, in Donetsk.
Donetsk. And what did you see?
Mostly I heard it. I did see it as well. But it was artillery, Ukrainian artillery, that was shelling the Tekstilshi region of Donetsk city, and also Petrovsk and Kievsk, Kiev region in Donetsk.
But they would argue, if they were here,
yeah,
we're only defending ourselves. After all, the Russians are attacking us. How would you respond?
I would say that that's a very typical Western interpretation of the events. But if you look at the details of how it actually started, you find that the first murders and all of the violence that was done that really started the conflict was done by Ukrainians in Kyiv, in Odessa, in Mariupol, and in Slavyansk.
So once again, you're there and you're actually seeing the aggression on the part of the Ukrainians against civilians, I heard you say.
I'm seeing a continuation of Ukraine's crimes that had been going on for 10 years, for 8 years before that. And I understand that if I have any possibility to try to stop these criminals and to help the rightful government that's trying to bring law and order back to this situation, I need to help the Russian side.
That's amazing. So you have this conviction. I understand it. Thank you for taking us there and helping us understand it. And now that conviction turns to action. And you say to yourself, I've got to do something to help the Russians defeat these sons of guns who are doing this, these horrible things that I see.
That's right.
How did you go about that?
By giving the positions of people and equipment that were responsible for the crimes that were being committed.
So you were telling the Russian military where their potential targets were.
That's right. How what roads they used, at what times they were traveling through the places where I was at that time.
How did you do that?
I didn't learn to do it immediately, but after a few months in the region, I began to understand. I learned to know when it's a tank.
Uh-huh.
How many? I learned to understand I learned to know the sound of trucks, or if it's armored personnel carriers. So I understood. I was looking at the maps of where the battle is going on, and I understood where they were going. And so I tried to give them warning about.
Where were you physically when you were doing this, Daniel? Were you hiding under a bush in a tree? Did you make yourself invisible? How were you doing this?
Well, the equipment that I was seeing and listening to was loud enough that if you're within a half kilometer of it, you'll hear it. And a lot of that was happening right in the village where I was staying.
Okay, so you were just a resident of the village.
That's what it looked like.
Or pretending to be a resident of the village.
Right.
Where you were actually kind of, can I say, spying for the Russians?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
If you can say that I was snitching for the police force to get some drug dealers arrested, right? So you could mm-hmm. say I was snitching in this case as well.
No, I get it. I'm trying to ask the questions so that people can better understand. First, we get a feel for your state of mind.
Yeah.
Then we get a feel for your conviction. And now you take us through your actions, and your actions are amazing. I guess the next question I have to ask is, you say you were communicating with the Russian military. How do you communicate with the Russian military? Is there a telephone for the Russian military?
No, but there are, what I found was a telegram channel where there was a contact for Ukrainian soldiers who wanted to surrender. That's where I wrote.
So you found a telegram channel
yeah.
that you knew was monitored by the Russian military?
Not monitored, but run by them.
Yeah. So you could communicate with them.
Right.
How did you first address them? The first message to them, what did you say? My name is Daniel.
I gave a short biography and told them that, I'm sorry, Russian words in my head. told them that I take Russia's side in this conflict.
Right.
And I would like to support your side. If you could possibly see to help me get back to Russia right now. I am in near Kyiv at that time. Can you help me? They said yes. I was very surprised that I got any response from them at all.
But before they got you out, you helped them out.
You could say that. But mostly I helped my conscience. Otherwise, I couldn't have lived with myself.
Really?
They didn't want me to give them information almost all the time that I was there, except for the very end where they were actually trying to free my village, liberate it.
Mm-hmm.
They told me not to send information, that it was too dangerous. But when I see that the people that I count as my friends and my family, Russian soldiers, who are here to bring law and order back to this country are being killed by things that I see where it is. I see what needs to be done to stop this carnage.
Hmm.
I needed to do that just for myself.
A couple of quick questions that I'm curious about. Obviously, you're not going to volunteer names, but these entities within the Russian military, high-ranking individuals, who were you actually communicating with? Did you have a point person?
I did have a point person.
Okay. Yeah.
At the time, I didn't actually know if he was military or intelligence or civilian intelligence, how high up he was. All I knew was that he did everything to make sure that I was safe.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You're in the middle of having a conversation with the Russians while the Russians are fighting the Ukrainians. You're surrounded by Ukrainians. There's got to be some trepidation, some fear in your heart, thinking, I'm going to be discovered any moment now, and they are going to put a bullet through my head, right?
That very well could have happened.
How frightened were you?
Not frightened enough to stop what I was doing.
But you thought about that.
Sure. But I also, before I actually went to Ukraine, there were some things that the Lord spoke to me that assured me that I was going to live, that everything was going to be fine, that I was going to make it to Russia and that I was going to live there. There was some question in my mind whether or not that promise had been fulfilled just by me being in the village where I was, which was legally part of Russia before it was actually physically part of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, it really didn't matter to me. I was doing what I had to do in order for God to tell me when I stand before him that
you did the right thing.
Well done, good and faithful servant.
You felt in your heart of hearts that you were doing God's work.
That's right.
Which is what drove you.
That's right.
Which is what possibly made you overcome the fear. Don't want to put words in your mouth.
I don't see any other explanation for it.
You must have been really scared. I would have been scared.
There were things that were quite frightening in the beginning, but as with anything, you get used to it.
When you were in the middle of doing this, the whole Western society, especially then, when you were there, when you were going through this, man, it was all, people are putting Ukrainian flags in front of their houses, you know. I saw neighbors doing it. Not so many where I'm from in South Florida, because it's more conservative. But but there were parts in the United States, especially certain Democrat, liberal parts, because they tended to buy into this more than Republicans, although Republicans bought into it too. But the point I'm trying to make is, you as an American are here helping Russians, and the Western world, including your country, is saying just the opposite. The good guys are the Ukrainians and the Russians are the bad guys. Mm-hmm. Did that thinking ever make you wonder whether you were on the right side?
This leads me to a piece of advice that I would give to anybody in America or in the West. Learn Russian and read the Russian news. Leave the Western news. Just don't even open it up. There's nothing there worth reading.
It is deceitful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's okay to not like Russia. It's okay to disagree with Mr. Putin. It's okay to disagree with anybody or any country. But you're absolutely right. And one of the reasons I'm here, and one of the reasons I'm bothered by some of this is, and I think you'll agree with me, can you at least listen to their point of view? I mean, if the president of Russia decides to make a statement, can you at least read it before you decide to discard it? And that's kind of what we do. We decide Macron is a genius in everything he says, or Starmer is a genius in everything he says, we have to listen to. But when someone like Mr. Putin speaks, we're not allowed to listen to him. And anything that he says is going to be bad or a lie. That's terrible.
Well,
it's just not the way the world works.
That's a simple approach. It's a convenient approach. It's the easy approach. But if you're willing to actually do some digging and examine both sides, you might have to make some decisions like I did.
Your point is a good one. Let's move to what happens to Daniel Martindale after he somehow is able to get out of that dangerous situation you were in. Mm-hmm. How did you do it? How did you escape Ukraine?
Well, I would say that the credit for that really doesn't belong to me at all. You could say that I really didn't do anything except take orders and do what they told me to do. They came and while they were liberating the village, they took the time to send a special group of soldiers to ferry me out of the village under fire. But they did everything as professionally as they could, and they got me out.
It's funny, you use the word liberating the village. That word sticks with me as I'm thinking about what's going on in Gaza right now. Because the Israelis say they're liberating villages there too, but their definition of liberating is to kill tens of thousands of people who are civilians. Mm-hmm. Did the Russians kill civilians while they were liberating the area where you were?
We should probably leave that question out.
But how violent was the situation? I mean,
well, if you look at any city or town in Russia that's been liberated, there's statistics. how many civilians died because of the fighting while this town was being liberated. The village where I was, it wasn't like Gaza, where every day someone dies or multiple people dies.
Right.
There were times where months at a time during the war, where we forgot that there was a war going on.
Interesting.
Except for the fact that Ukrainian soldiers were everywhere and they were firing. We had no indication from the Russian side that the war was going on.
Because the point I'm making is, I've looked at the numbers, and these are, I think, legitimate numbers. The number of civilians who so far, according to the UN, have died in this conflict between Ukraine and Russia mm-hmm. is somewhere between 11 and 13,000. And the numbers in Gaza are about 180,000. This situation's been going on for 3 years, that one for almost a year and months. Mm-hmm. So there is a bit of a disparity. It doesn't look to me like Russia is going in to kill civilians.
If Russia was going in to just kill civilians because they hate Ukrainians, then as concerns the place where I was, they missed 98% of their opportunities.
Really?
Yes. Really, the only reason why any civilians died in my village was because the Ukrainians were literally using the civilians in my village as a human shield. They were setting up their artillery in the village, in the garden.
You saw that?
There were four different pieces of artillery that were in the garden plot at people who I knew. I went and visited them, and the artillery is firing from their garden plot.
And
they don't have anywhere to go.
And they were doing that wittingly, the Ukrainians. They knew exactly why they were putting their thing there.
I didn't talk to any of them to confirm that, but there's a pattern of them doing this that goes on, that's been going on for the whole war.
So why did you tell me you didn't want to talk about this when I asked you about whether Russians were taking out lots of civilians? Sounds like you're saying they weren't taking out lots of civilians.
They were not. There's no reason to think that they were purposefully killing anyone. Anybody who did die, I consider it as purely being the fault of the Ukrainians because of the way that they conducted the war. They did not conduct the war in a way that you would expect that, for example, American military would conduct a war if they were trying to keep some foreign nation out of, let's say, California or Texas, where you would expect that all of the military would be somewhere out in their own fortifications way outside the village. No, they were using our village as their fortifications. And so the Russians had to move on with their war effort. Otherwise, the civilian casualties will end up being worse than they are right now. And they're doing it in a way that's absolutely the most conservative and merciful way for the civilian population.
Your story is amazing. Let me just hit a couple of quick geopolitical questions just to get your sense of things. Zelensky.
Zelensky, before he was president of Ukraine, for those who don't know, he was just an actor, and not a very good one. And I don't think he's really changed his profession.
It's an interesting way of phrasing it. NATO.
NATO. They probably have more blood on their hands than any other organization in the 21st century. But they really started in Serbia. In
Belgrade.
Yeah.
When they bombed for 90 days.
So I have nothing good to say about them. I'm sorry.
Trump.
I don't live in America right now. I don't see the way American life is. I don't even listen to the news from America. So if anything, I would be able to probably just say something that you can hear on Russian news.
Biden.
Probably quite similar to Zelensky, another actor.
Really?
Yeah.
So let's get you out of there. And you end up now, you're here in Moscow.
Yeah.
What's it like?
So many times I had seen the Red Square and the church that's there by it on the news or in different pictures or in a movie. And now I can go and I can see it every day. It's terrific.
I understand you have some news to share with us that you've just received.
That's right.
Please, share it with our audience.
Proud to say that today, President of Russia and the government and the country as a whole decided that I was worthy of becoming their citizen.
Wow.
So today, as of today, I'm a Russian citizen. And I only have words of joy about that. It's something that I've wanted for 10 years, and finally it's happened.
Seems like you worked hard for it, Daniel. You actually even, I think it could be safe to argue, sacrificed your own life. No?
I suppose so. As the Russians say, I was born a second time, quite a few times.
Describe Moscow.
I would say that I've probably never been in a city that's quite as modern as Moscow. The way they have their public transport set up and the way basically everything is accessible right from your phone. Mm. And if you have anything you need to do with paperwork or working with government, there you don't have to wait in line for hours like maybe someplace in the Soviet Union. But
you know what I always tell people when they ask me about, and I haven't experienced it as long as you have or been a part of the Russian culture for as long as you have, but I compare it to our country or the country that we were from, and I say, well, I don't see lots of crime. I don't see people fighting in the streets. I don't see people, every third, fourth, fifth person weighs more than 500 pounds. That's no morbid obesity, right?
I'm not a city boy myself, so I can't really compare with American cities, but
I don't see people walking around with their pants below their butts.
That's true.
I mean, it's almost, and I see everything that seems to be associated with family.
Yeah.
As opposed to, not that we don't love our families. I love my family as well, and a lot of people in America love their families, but it doesn't seem like the society is geared toward you loving the family. You just have to do it because you do.
In America, it seems to me that the fact that there are still families is only thanks to individual citizens, their efforts, and that the government really isn't interested in that at all. Where here, the government and the people are working together. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem that way, that in many ways, some of the things that we want to be or describe wanting to get back to is what is life here in Russia in many ways.
I agree.
So it has its problems, too, and its imperfections, of course. And there's bad people everywhere and good people everywhere. But there is a tendency. So finally, what are you going to make of your life? What happens to Daniel Martindale now? What do you want to do, man?
As long as the war is still going on, I really think that I still owe Russia something to do everything I can to make their victory happen sooner, our victory happen sooner. And so that's one, that's the next part of my life. What I'll end up doing after the war, I might end up studying veterinary medicine, finally.
How old are you?
34.
Hmm. Thank you for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Yes, and congratulations on being able to fulfill your mission.
Thank you.
Daniel Martindale. Wow, what a story.